Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hello, I'm in the garden again. I'm not doing that again. Oh, look at this one. Ah, oh, what's happened here? Hi, good morning. Welcome to the podcast. We've got Mick Wright coming up in a minute. And then one or two bits of any other business. Are you all right? I'm travelling back on Wednesday. So I have to keep this brief because I've got to go and get my PCR test. My mother's not looking forward to it. Getting drilled in the nasal cavity. Memories. Well, look, here he is. Here's Mick Wright.
Every day the papers pump out endless streams of hate. The fifth column's propaganda they will propagate. But who can bear the traitor ramparts of the fourth estate? Mick Wright, a.k.a. Broken Bottle Boy. Mick Wright, a.k.a. Broken Bottle Boy.
How are you? Are you all right?
I am fine. I'm in Northern Ireland.
You are in Northern Ireland now? Okay.
Yes. Yes, I was just writing about racism. And then I remembered I needed to talk to you. My favourite
No, what? I'm happy with that, Monica. Everyone's favourite racist. Should we talk about the thing? Did you source it? Have you got a contact?
Yes, I'm drinking a lovely cup of tea right now.
Oh, yeah, for the tea. Yeah.
For the tea, that's right. For the Barry's tea.
The Barry's lovely tea. Well, now, you are, of course, everyone's favourite dog-hating squaddy.
That's right. That's right. I despise dogs.
Following on from your newsletter across the weekend, where you talked about the pen-farthing dog fracas.
Yes, and his many, many, many fans online.
Were you really baptised in a ship's bell?
Yes, I was.
Is that like a thing?
I don't know like how often they do it, but my dad was in the Navy. My mum and dad were both in the Navy, and yeah, there's pictures of me. It's on board HMS Yarmouth.
Wow.
I believe the captain was involved in the ceremony. I think there was also a priest, but. You know.
Well, I hope so for your sake, babe. And I'm going to do a little prayer for you tonight.
With the angles now.
We love you. I'll find you. Yeah, cat for bunch. Do you know what a cat for bunch is?
No, I don't know.
It's a bunch of flowers presented to a partner by way of an attempt at atonement.
Oh, from like
a... There's been hastily from like rested from a traffic light somewhere.
24-hour garage.
No. From literally a bollard or something where they've been sellotaped on. Yeah.
Oh, that's bleak.
You're with the angles now. Yeah. Cat for bunch. Just don't ask me what a Bromley tickle is. Anyway, we all love an animal story.
Don't we just? And you know, Keir Starmer still desperately waiting to be able to brutally murder Geronimo the alpaca is probably delighted to hear that there's more potential victims for his killing spree.
He should maybe get like a budgie or something. Like, he needs an animal. Would love him if he had an animal.
He grew up around the donkey sanctuary, didn't he? So,
oh yeah, he did, didn't he? Well, there you go. Do that then. But So yes, a sort of a schism opened with the government. And the press, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really interesting one because, like, nobody really comes out of it that well. So, Paul Penfarthing, former Marine, and he set up an animal shelter in Kabul, and then he's been all over the papers like a pissing puppy this week with this campaign to get himself and his animals and his Afghan staff out of the country. Spoiler, he and the animals have got out of the country. The Afghan staff haven't. Called Operation Ark. And so that obviously there's been a lot of various, you know, you, on the one side, you've got who I've decided to call the Penisters, who are very, you know, this kind of emotionalist, you know, highly emotive thing about we've got to get these animals out, you know.
I love dogs.
I love dogs. I love dogs, right?
Yeah. But, can you pass more bacon? I love dogs.
Yeah, but... But basically what happened yesterday is that voice message that Penfarthing had sent to special advisor to Ben Wallace, the defence secretary, a guy called Peter Quentin, was shockingly leaked to the Mail, the Sunday Times and the Telegraph.
Wow.
Curious that they all got hold of this
voice message. A weird kind of scattergun leak there.
Yeah, curious. Impossible to tell why those particular papers were chosen. But anyway, in it, he swears a lot.
Expletive-ridden, foul-mouthed tirade.
Foul-mouthed rant, yeah, classic. What I really enjoy is the way that papers like The Times, you know, censor the F word. So it's like a really easy game of hangman. so, you know.
E. Oh. Oh. Yeah, A.
No. Let's see what Mr. Chips is doing in the video.
Oh man, I had to draw some old style Mr. Chips animations for a show I worked on called TV Offal.
I remember that show.
Yeah, I produced and directed the second series of that show. One of the phrases we came up with was not a million miles away from Penfarthing's. Expletives.
Yes.
It was something or other. Me till I. No, I can't say any of it. Carry on.
So anyway, the thing for this is two things, right?
Thank
One,
you.
I think that the Penfarthing thing is quite ridiculous in the sense that the Afghan staff have not got out, but the animals have, right? Mm.
But no one cares about that, right?
No, and there is a good argument to say that his campaign and the campaign by his supporters distracted civil servants and military personnel who were trying to get more people out of Afghanistan. But you can also say, well, this wouldn't have been such a huge problem if the evacuation hadn't have been, you know, bungled by the incompetent prime minister and, you know, the part-time foreign secretary, the dunder-headed Dominic Raab.
Do you mean like mentally part-time?
Yeah, mentally, he's physically, he's you know, and I don't know if you saw the clip of the two of them having a little chuckle about how many emails they've received from people desperate to escape Afghanistan, which was pretty horrifying. So what's essentially happened here is I don't, you know, and there's a lot of people who like and are on in favour of Penfarthing, but I essentially think he is a bit of an entitled. Insert expletive
nicely
here,
done.
And he has, you know, his role in this has ended up using resources that could be of use and used by others. Because what his defenders will say is, oh well, yeah, but he got a private plane chartered, so that hasn't affected resources. But of course, Kabul Airport. I was talking to people who've worked in the aviation industry and run airports, including airports during evacuations, and they will say, no, you can't just say we're bringing in another plane. It's all fine. You know, it's actually very complicated, particularly in an emergency situation. But what's happened here is the right wing press have turned their fire on him on the same day that The Observer reported that thousands of emails to the Foreign Office about the evacuation went unread, including emails flagged up by government ministers, Home Secretary, Leader of the Opposition. So you've got one annoying bloke ends up being sort of the focus of the blame. And yeah. I was punishing myself yesterday by listening to Times Radio, and every 20 minutes they were going, "We've got the and here's the audio of Penn Farthing, and what do you think, you know, rent a guest that we've got on?" And I think it's appalling because you know he valued animals' lives over humans. It's like, okay, yeah, but the other way of looking at it is he and his supporters have used the exact same tactics that the government and the tabloids regularly use, of focusing on cuddly animals. You know, The Sun knows its readers prefer cuddly animals to refugees that it demonizes on a daily basis. And actually, The Sun went with the headline, "Homeward Hound, Penn Farthing's plane leaves Afghanistan with 173 dogs and cats after heartbreak at leaving staff behind." Now, the other thing to pretty, there's a couple of funny-ish aspects to this, I think. One is that they're calling Penn Farthing is being called within Whitehall pet dick because of how much they don't like him. And the other one, which is not funny but sort of grotesque, is it's likely that most of these animals that have been got back will end up being either put in quarantine for an extremely long time or put down.
Because
rabies is endemic in Afghanistan. And then of course you've got like people bringing up the story of Annie, who was dubbed Britain's loneliest elephant, Blackie the donkey, who we talked about recently, didn't we? The whole thing is a mess, but I think it's a really interesting illustration of how the press can work to in defense of the government by the government leaking this foul-mouthed rant, and then shifting the focus of the story to look at this guy. And so you then have an argument between the animal lovers, like you say, chewing on their bacon sandwich on a Sunday morning to say how sad it is, and the writing press saying, this guy is the one reason it all went to it, rather than, you know, actually a government that has run this evacuation appallingly. So it's a kind of, it's just like a classic model of the of how the British newspapers will engage and collaborate in a smear, essentially. I don't think you need to smear this guy. I think it was pretty old. You know, I think his own actions were enough. But you know, it's just curious to have his voicemail, you know, released and being played on the radio every 15 minutes.
But it's also a great case in point of the House always wins. Whereby, you know, sure, this guy's doing this thing, fine, we'll just do that to deflect from all our other deficiencies. Well, you know, the House always wins.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, it's kind of a bit cheap and a bit obvious of them to say, look at this guy, he's a self-aggrandizing and self-serving, self-interested, and he's just using cheap emotionalism. And then you think, well, that's what the government does on a daily basis. It's what the tabloids do on a daily basis. The Daily Mail exists only on cheap emotionalism. It either wants to make you angry or go, look at this little bird that has broken its wing, or this hedgehog that was found covered in clay, or whatever. It's just like, you know, meanwhile. And the other thing that drives me crazy with this kind of stuff,
it's actually covered in cubes of cheese, but carry on.
Both from our government and from the newspapers, is they're extremely selective on when they decide to weep big salty tears about women's rights or the suppression of human rights. Because, yes, Taliban now in control of Afghanistan again, and, you know, hardly likely to win, you know, the Jermaine Greer Award for feminist thought. But we don't write about, the papers rarely write about Saudi Arabia. And in fact, papers like the Telegraph have taken money to run advertorials about how great Saudi Arabia is, you know, because they're our ally. The human rights and women's rights in Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia are very comparable. But of course, Saudi Arabia buys a lot of weapons from us. So they're great. Good lads. And we definitely don't talk about their heavy involvement in 9/11 and most of the terrorism from, you know, that has occurred since the late 90s till right now.
Well, I think you're right that it's puppies.
Another chirpy, humorous line from me this morning.
We should have a sort of squash ladder with like puppies, alpacas, children, women, black people, immigrants. Yeah. You know, and we can just sort of slide them up and down. But I reckon puppies are always going to be.
Yeah, I mean, a puppy's right to life is, you know, I mean, essentially, it's like they're doing a calculus and saying, okay, one puppy,
yeah,
100, 150 Afghan children. I mean,
yeah,
literally the same.
And yet I eat off the floor and then we everywhere and I get thrown out of the bingo hall. Mick, thank you for that. You were talking, you were saying you were going to talk about another thing that you were going to do this morning.
Okay, yeah.
I've been refreshing my inbox frantically for your newsletter.
Oh, I haven't finished it yet. No, I was writing it while I was talking to you. So the one that will come out later today is about, there's a new campaign. It's not really a campaign. It's like some right wing nuts from in academia. All the usual people have set up a new site called History Reclaimed, which is going to be about stopping such lies as Churchill was a racist.
Right. But he wasn't. He wasn't the nation's favourite. That's me.
So yes, of course. Okay. And so, anyways, this Professor Robert Toombs, who is an emeritus professor of history at Cambridge.
My favourite.
He regularly writes these things about how the Marxists, the cultural Marxists, are distorting history for their own purposes. You know, completely ignoring the fact that, you know, he's involved in his own narrative that he likes, and his narrative of history is essentially everything that he saw in movie matinees, you know, on a Sunday afternoon as a child is correct. And so you have this thing where he says, well, Churchill wasn't racist, and it's only a 21st century affectation to believe that Churchill was racist. Now, there's just a few examples, right? So I was looking back and thinking, okay, well, let's see if this is true. So In May 1954, Violet Bonham Carter, who's a friend of Churchill's, asked him about a Labour Party delegation visiting China. And Churchill said, I hate people with slit eyes and pigtails. I don't like the look of them or the smell of them. He called India the
He was talking about the Labour Party, though, I think.
Yeah. He called people from India the beastliest people in the world next to the Germans, and told Leo Amery, who's another conservative politician, that they were a beastly people with a beastly religion. And at the time of the Bengal famine, Churchill put stockpiling food in Britain ahead of feeding people there, because he told Amery that aid would accomplish little because Indians bred like rabbits.
Everyone loves rabbits.
And Amory wrote in his diary, because the thing that they'll say is, well, yeah, but this was just what people thought back then. But actually, there's a whole load of Tories of the time who thought that Churchill's views on this stuff were really extreme. And Amory wrote in his diary, on the subject of India, Winston's not quite sane. I do not see much difference between his outlook and Hitler's.
Wow.
And Violet Bonham Carter wrote in her diaries, he was, alas, very anti-black. US Vice President Henry Wallace recorded in his diary that he had attempted to challenge Churchill about the notion of Anglo-Saxon superiority. And Churchill, having drunk quite a bit of whiskey, which is pretty much what he did every day, said, why be apologetic about Anglo-Saxon superiority? We're superior. We had a common heritage which have worked out over the centuries in England and have been perfected by the American Constitution. And then in 1937, this is the last part I'll just give you for this, is that he said, I don't admit that a great wrong has been done to the red Indians of America or the black people of Australia. I do not admit that it was wrong for these people to have been subjugated by a stronger race, a higher grade race, a more worldly wise race that had come in and taken their place. And in 1954, he backed a slogan, keep England white, in an attempt to prevent immigration from the West Indies. But you'd be a fool to ever suggest he was racist. Mm. Now, the thing that I think is really interesting about this is the notion that you can't say that Churchill is racist.
Can't.
Wasn't something that the right wing was saying only even about 10 years ago. So I, in the research for this edition I'm writing now, found a review published by The Spectator in 2010 of a series of Churchill biographies, and the first line of the piece says, Winston Churchill was a racist. But you wouldn't get The Spectator publishing that now. Instead, they published like countless articles about how dare people claim Churchill was racist. I keep saying Hitler, I don't. Hitler was definitely racist. How dare people claim Churchill was racist? It's ridiculous. It's cultural Marxism. It's wokeism gone mad. But literally 10 years ago, they were happy to publish a piece that said, oh, yeah, no, it was definitely racist.
Yeah.
But what's happened is with the prosecution of the culture war that they are, you know, engaged in now, they have to have an an enemy without, you know, and an enemy within. So they'll say, oh yeah, these people, these historians, they distort everything. And you go, well, no, they don't really. You distort it for
you
your
do.
Purposes.
You
and,
do.
But you don't want anyone else to. You don't want anyone else to have it. And it's, they have this thing where they say, well, we're just about honest telling the honest truth and not narratives like these people. And it's like, no, you pick and choose your facts the same. All historians do to a certain extent. Say, this is how I see it based on the facts. You know, here's some evidence to support my view of it.
Yeah. There is a sort of terrifying syndrome at the moment where each side of any debate now accuses the other one of exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, you are. That's all we're saying now in, you know, florid ways, but it's the same principle.
Yeah. So anyway, that's going to be coming out later today. But it's really interesting because of course the Times and the Telegraph have gone big on this because a vast amount of their output, not just in the comment sections but in the news sections as well, is defined by this central thesis that there is a kind of that the woke are in control, even though the right wing is currently engaged in a march through the cultural institutions. When you look at the BBC, now led by a Tory donor and a former Tory council candidate. When you look at Ofcom, where they're trying to install Paul Dacre as the head of Ofcom. When you look at the fact that we are into the 11th year of a Tory government, but that kind of, because the Times and the Telegraph need their readers to be perpetually scared. You cannot say, well, basically, the right's in the ascendancy and the left have very little influence. That doesn't work. So you have to have this notion that, oh, well,
there's a monster
everything
coming.
Is being ruined by the woke. You know, it's the reds under the bed left. So now you've got to have, you know, don't know. There's not a good rhyme for the woke.
I can't think of one.
The woke in the cowpoke. I don't know.
Well, that's good. That's good. No, I enjoyed that.
It doesn't have to, but listen, with the Telegraph and the Times, it doesn't have to make sense.
Yeah.
You just have to say it with conviction.
Yeah. And again and again and again. Well, thank you very much, Mick Wright, who would rather we were all speaking German today.
That's absolutely correct. 100% correct. Yeah. It's a beautiful language, Jake. It's a beautiful
language. Here we go.
It's the Meccano of languages. I love it. They're just like, add one word onto another till it becomes,
I mean,
you know.
Speaking as the nation's favourite racist, I hate German. I hate the German language. I'm much more of a French nut myself.
Yeah, of course. Of course you are.
Of course
because
you
you're
are.
Part of them. It's because you're caught of part of the metropolitan liberal elite, mate.
That's
what
right,
you
mate.
Are.
Yeah, elite.
I see you.
It's got a nice ring to it. Right. Everyone should go to your newsletter. I haven't been very coherent, but you've been amazing. It's brokenbottleboy.substack.com. I did that bit all right.
You did. Will you be playing my jingle before you play this out? I hope so.
Of course I will. Yeah.
I still regret that I didn't ask you to do something much more annoying to you. I was trying to be annoying, and then it turns out that klezmer music was bang on your...
It's all I have. Bang. It's all I know.
Just endlessly...
Jaunty in a minor key. That's all I can do. I keep thinking, you know, maybe one day we'll do a refresh. You never know. What would you go for? What would you go for next time?
90s rave track.
Oh, come on. You see my haircut. I'm dying in the wool 90s. Right, Mick, have a good day. Good luck getting that thing, yeah?
Yeah, good luck getting that. You mean bags and bags of Tato crisps?
No, I mean it.
How long do you think we'll keep this bit up?
Until you get one. Until you get one. And you can launch your culture war. Right. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, I'm just off to the woods now.
Stay safe out there. Okay, all right.
Bye-bye.
Mick Wright, a.k.a. Broken Bottle Boy. Mick Wright, a.k.a. Broken Bottle Boy.
Dog-hating, Churchill-bashing Mick Wright there. One or two bits and pieces here. On the Patreons-only podcast, the idea got floated that we should all do our best chicken impressions. I think it was Jem suggested that. I checked WhatsApp this morning. Not a sausage. One deleted message from Jane. So there's still plenty of time if you want to get your best chicken impression in. I just want to do that. That was with me and Cousin Davey, and Hannah has emailed itsnottoday@swanburst.com saying a couple of Fridays ago there was some discussion about there not being a song for the Cousin's Yap. Here, for what it's worth, with a naffness rating of 11 is my offering. It goes to the verse and then chorus of Lord of the Dance. Okay, we'll give it a go. Oh, that's my thing, making a weird noise. We listen on a Monday, fresh and bright, to hear the thoughts of Jacob McWright. We listen on a Wednesday, sometimes it's John. He tries not to swear, and the pod goes on. It's more Mick, I think you'll find, is this up the sweary end. And we love Cousin Davey. He is the king of the oral oddity. So we listen on a Friday full of glee and thank our stars for the producer, Julie. It's good. I don't know if I made that scan right, but, you know, we staggered through it, didn't we? Take care and stay safe, says Hannah. Good. Well done. We've had some emails from Hedy. Oh, boy. Here we go. Heart in mouth. Where's the... Why is it making a weird noise? Can you hear the weird noise? I don't know. Just hit it. Dear Jape, I want to have a fight. Who would you recommend? I don't want to meet anyone with a musket, though. P.S. I attempted to stop Lou Reed. I didn't. I'm sorry. There you go. That's the caliber of stuff coming through. If you've got anything to add to that conversation, it's not today. It's swanburst.com. I'm sort of looking forward to getting back to routine now. You know, this has all been fun. It has been really fun. But it'll be nice to kind of get my teeth back into the podcast and sort it all out and, you know, be a bit more present, guys. He's just not present. You know what I mean? He's just not very present. Don't forget to follow on whatever social media your platforms you use, be it Twitter, be it Instagram. Bake It Vegans. You don't have to be vegan. It's just going to be a fun sort of wraparound thing with the Great British Bake Off. The more I think about it, the more I realise it's a quite terrifying commitment to make. There it is. I've made it. I'll have to follow through now. Follow that for updates on that there, this and that, and that and there then. I fed two cats and a little flotilla of chicks this morning. Can't argue with that, can you? I will see you on Wednesday for my final show from France for a while. Perhaps a good thing. All right, bye.
This has been a Swanburst Media production.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.